Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. And so welcome to the show. Not a lot of news since last time, because I think I only recorded the last podcast a few days ago. But I'm back at work. I'm back on doing a juggling show on a cruise ship. Unfortunately, though, the cruise ship that I'm on at the moment is going along through the North Atlantic, and the weather isn't that good. The wind is up a bit, and the ship is tipping backwards and forwards and side to side quite a bit. So I'm looking forward to the show that I'm going to do this evening. I'm going to change it round a bit so I don't have to do so much balancing and juggling in my show. Swap it around a bit. But also the worst thing is, because I've got this really bad leg, I'm walking around on a crutch, just one crutch at the moment. And it's always been tricky walking up and down the hills in Lisbon where I've been staying over the past few weeks. And now I'm sort of walking across uneven surfaces on a moving ship, which is a little bit tricky. Anyway, it's good to be back at work. This is actually the first time I've been back at work since my bad leg has really been affecting me. So let's move on to what else notes have I got here. Oh yeah, feedback. Thanks a lot for the good feedback. If you missed the review of 2008 show, I asked for feedback, and the question that I asked for was how did you find the SFBRP podcast? How did you find the podcast, and what made you listen for the first time? And I've been getting some really good feedback there. Lots of people just found it randomly through iTunes. Other people heard me on like other podcasts and things like that. And that's all pretty good. There's also quite a few people who also juggle as well, like me. And they went, oh yeah, I found your videos on YouTube, and then I looked at your website and I found a podcast, and I like for science fiction, so now I'm listening. And I think that's pretty cool. If you didn't answer that question, which I know probably 99.9% of you didn't, send me an email, luke@juggler.net, and tell me how you found the SFBRP, how you found this podcast, and what made you listen for the first time. That would be really cool. Anyway, moving on to this episode. The book that I'm reviewing this episode is called Gateway by Frederick Pohl, and it was first published back in 1977. I first actually read this book many years ago, probably around about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, I don't know, and I think I've read it since then. I'm thinking this is maybe the third time that I've read this book, but I can't remember. I just remember it being a really fun read, and I thought, hey, yep, I'll try it out again, you know, to review a book that I know I like, and to have some good fun reading. And that is actually all I remember from it being really good. Well, actually, I remember a lot more from the book, because the book does have lots of memorable scenes and events and characters and things like that. So, and obviously other people agree that it's quite a memorable book, or a good book, because it did win the Hugo and Nebula Award. It's one of those few books which won both of those two top awards. But so obviously other people agree. So let me set the world of the book. Around about 500,000 years ago, there was this alien race that lived on Venus. Probably not from Venus, but they lived there, and they were called the Heechee. Or the humans called them the Heechee. The thing is, about 500,000 years ago, after they lived there for a while, they decided that they didn't want to live there anymore. So they deserted the place, cleared up everything, and left. But in orbit around the sun, they left this asteroid. And on this asteroid, they left about 1,000 spaceships. And these spaceships, if you get in them, they can travel faster than light to loads and loads of different destinations across the galaxy. And as this asteroid, because of all these different spaceships that were found there, becomes a gateway to the stars, it's called Gateway. And so is the book called Gateway. However, there is a catch. And the catch is that when humans find Gateway and find the Heechee artifacts and stuff like that, around about 300 years in our future now, so about 300 years in the future, they don't know how to use any of the alien technology, nor can they find any instructions or how to read any of the instructions or anything like that. So very little is known about the Heechee, if anything at all, and that is a big mystery that runs throughout the book. Who are the Heechee, and where do they come from, and how the hell did they make all this cool advanced technology? But let's get back to the spaceships, because that's where this book really shines, or this is what the main focus of the Heechee technology is that we look in this book. There's these 1,000 spaceships. Now what you do, if you sit in one of these spaceships, you can turn some dials in there to set the destination. So you can turn one and then turn another dial, and different colours come up. And if the colours light up when you turn them, you've got a valid combination. In other words, a valid destination. And then you pull a lever or twist a dial, I can't remember exactly which, and the spaceship flies where you ordered it to go. But you don't know how long it's going to take to get there, and so you hope you're not going to run out of food and air and water on the way there. And then when you get there, you don't know actually how dangerous it's going to be or what you're going to find there. So something could kill you. Maybe you're going to come out into the wavefront of an exploding supernova, some kind of thing like that. So you really don't want to fly out to one of those and things like that. And then what you do, once you get there, you do some science and you pick up anything that you can find, any kind of other alien technology that's laying around there, and then you pull a lever and you fly home again. So there's this Gateway Corporation, which is owned by the world superpowers, and they, when you bring any kind of alien technology back, you get paid for it if they think they can use it in any way. If you find something useful, you get paid big time for that kind of thing, but only if you find something, and then only if you get back alive. Also, there's a big science program going on. So if you go out and you do some good science, some good astronomy, so you go out and you find an interesting star or find an interesting planet or find something that's interesting to science, when you get back, you can get a big bonus for knowledge. So it's not just finding artifacts, it's also getting new knowledge and results and stuff like that. But the thing is, you might not find anything interesting in scientists. And also, if you do, it might kill you and you might not get back alive anyway. So this is the main setup. People volunteer to go out in one of these spaceships alone or in small teams of three or five people, and then come back and see what money they can earn. The thing is, the statistics are really bad. You know, it's pretty much worse than a coin flip. You flip a coin, heads or tails. Are you going to live or are you going to die? And even if you do live, or even if your spaceship does come back, you might not be alive on it, or there might be members of your crew dead on it and things like that, or maybe people have gone mad or all this kind of stuff. But also, the worst thing is you might return home empty-handed and with an empty wallet. And so, of course, to hit the big time, to get the millions that you want, the millions of dollars that you want, and the chance of a new life, you've got to go out again. And of course, if you don't get anything, you have to go out again until you die or hit the big time, and that's the real thing here. So some people win the money and some people die. Actually, most people die and some people win the money. The thing is, there's actually a lot of holes in this world, or a lot of plot holes going on here. The biggest question that you ask is, wait a second, robots exist in this world. We know robots exist because they're talked about in other parts of the book. So why don't you just program a robot to get in the machine, turn the dials until it lights up, and then fly out and fly back? And they can go for as long as they want because they're not going to run out of air, and they're not going to run out of any food or anything like that. And it doesn't matter what the radiation is like when they get to the other side. They can just go, oh, here I am, and then press a button and come back again. And so then when the robots have got flown out and back, then you can stick humans on board and do the science and pick up and do the exploring and pick up the heechy technology that's been left around and stuff like that. The thing is, it's never really explained why they don't do that, but I'm not really sure. Maybe it's like, oh, humans are cheap. You know, we've got this unlimited supply of this, you know, this overpopulated world is providing lots of humans who are willing to go off and do this way. The thing is, it's not the humans which are expensive, and it's not like they care about human life. It's the spaceships themselves. If you stick humans on them, you realize that the robots are like just as resilient, more resilient than humans, and probably just as reliable as humans. But the thing is, I don't really mind that these plot holes that exist there, because the whole setup is, you know, really silly in the first place, and it's just like a big excuse to explore not the world. You're not there exploring the trips out into space. You're not exploring the technology and the adventure. You're really exploring like the character, the personality, and the story of someone who would actually volunteer to take part in what amounts to a Russian roulette kind of style game. Like spin the chamber, pull the trigger, die, no. Money? No. Spin the trigger. You know, spin the chamber again. That's the kind of thing that you're in there. And so, of course, our main character that we follow is a guy called Robinette Broadhead. And again, yes, Robinette is a man's name in this book. But he's better known as Bob or Robbie, and he's someone who's volunteered to take part in flights out of Gateway. The thing is, first of course, we get to know a bit of his background, why he is willing to risk his life, risk everything for a chance at the big time. The thing is, it's because he doesn't actually have a lot to lose, because he just worked in what are called food mines, where they process, I think it's oil, shale into food, and he's pretty much at the bottom of the ladder, in the terms of rungs of humanity out there in the 21st century. No, not 21st, 20th 24th century, I guess it's sitting there. So what happens is he wins a lottery and he uses his winnings. He said, I could have just sort of like got myself a wife and settled down and have kids. He says, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to go out there and do something more, make something more with my life and really progress. So he uses his lottery winnings to fly out to Gateway, and there he trains for his missions and, you know, he experiences life on Gateway, on the asteroid that is Gateway. And of course he goes on a number of missions. I'm not spoiling it there as well, and he survives them all. Of course I'm not spoiling that, because there's other parts of the book which explain that very early on. The thing is, which makes this book really interesting for me, is that they take this sort of interesting science fiction setup, you know, the Gateway there, spaceships and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't go in that direction. You think, okay, most books would be concentrating on the trips out. So you get to Gateway and then it's all about exploring the galaxy. So they take the ships out and discover this, take the ships out and discover that, adventure and discovery and all that kind of stuff, risking your life for the big prize. The thing is, Gateway really focuses very little on Bob's trips. Instead, it focuses far more on his time on Gateway himself and how he can't build up courage to actually go out on a trip, and how he keeps putting off the decision. It's like, oh, I'm just waiting for the, you know, the right time. And then he finds a partner called Clara, and they are very like-minded in this way, that they're both going, oh no, we'll just wait until the right trip, we'll just wait, we're not really comfortable yet, we'll just wait. And they keep sort of deferring their decision, and chapter after chapter after chapter goes past and Bob is still on Gateway. And then he obviously goes off onto a mission, and you don't really, you know, you don't really find out very much about the mission. And then it's like another few chapters of him back on Gateway and exploring more excuses why not to go out. And of course Bob is our first person narrator, and he just says he's being prudent. It's like, oh no, I just don't think it's worth risking my life on this thing. The thing is, he is a very unreliable narrator, and you can see that he's telling us some reasons, but of course there's other reasons that are going on, you know, that he's coming up with in his head as well. Thing is, he's just a coward, really. But of course, in that situation, I would be a coward, but then again, I wouldn't be in that situation, or maybe I would be, I don't know. Alongside all the chapters on Gateway and the ones about his missions out into the wider galaxy, we have the story of Bob's therapy. Years and years after he returns, maybe, what is it, 10, 12 years after he returns from Gateway, he's very rich, of course, because you either return dead or rich. That's the way it goes from Gateway. And he has a therapist, which is a robot therapist that Bob calls Siegfried von Schrenk. Siegfried uses like Freudian psychoanalysis techniques on Bob, and he gets him to talk about his dreams and discuss his relationship with his mother and his failings as a lover and his homosexual tendencies and all that kind of thing, you know, all the great Freudian kind of ideas there. And Bob is, he goes along with his therapy, it's free, he doesn't actually have to be there, but he keeps doing it. So in one way he's a willing participant, but at the same time he really hates it, and he does all he can to subvert both the sessions, the therapy sessions, and his robot therapist at the same time. And this is one part of the book that I actually really like. In fact, I like most of the book, but this is the one part that I really like, because it's like a real fun parody kind of thing of like the common perceptions of Freudian psychoanalysis. It's like, okay, maybe Freudian psychoanalysis isn't like this, but it's like, okay, this is what everyone thinks it's like. So I actually really like that kind of comedic take on it. The thing is, when it comes down to it, I really hope that it is a comedic take on Freudian psychoanalysis, because if it isn't, Frederick Pohl has unintentionally written some hilarious dialogue and all that kind of stuff. And also he's sort of winking at us in that way. It's because, you know, it's in the end, it's not really the Freudian psychoanalysis that it comes down to. It's not to do with his mother, and it's not to do with this, or maybe it is slightly, but it really just comes down to Rob finally admitting to himself what kind of actions he has taken. And it's really him rebelling against the therapist that actually makes him strong enough to do that. So it's quite good there. And also, good thing is about this, because Bob, he's doing it all in like a first person narrative, and because he's so unreliable, he's, you know, we get different things. Like, for example, he goes, you know, it works on different levels. Like, Siegfried will pick up on his mistakes. Like, Bob will say something, and then Siegfried will go, Robbie, you said Clara, you didn't say Susie. And he says, no, I said Susie. He says, no, you said Clara. And of course, he did say Clara, and he's making mistakes and then not admitting to his mistakes, but he's telling us about the mistakes in the first place, which is really, really interesting way to look at it there as well. But then on top of that, there's another layer where he's showing us these little mistakes to say, okay, these are mistakes, but actually this entire thing is maybe a mistake, or what I'm doing here, or maybe my entire way I'm talking to you is a mistake. Like, he'll be telling us stuff and meaning something different, or he will be saying what he wants to tell us, but you can always recognize that lurking underneath there are things that he's not saying, but those are the things that he's really thinking, because of his actions and because of other things there. So it actually works on different levels here. The things that Siegfried picks up, like on the things he actually says, but then also the things that we can pick up, the sort of inconsistencies in the way that he's actually thinking at the same time, which is really good. And that's the whole point of the novel, because if you're actually looking for a space adventure kind of novel here, I mean, the book's got a picture of a spaceship on the front of it, and the spaceship is striking out into the unknown, and we're like, woohoo, we're going out from Gateway. Really, you don't get a whole lot of that in this book. And also, you don't really get a whole lot of, like, if you're looking for some kind of convincing accounts of psychotherapy, don't bother with the book either. It's really like a comedic, like, ironic exploration, not of the world, but mainly of the kind of character who would go on one of these trips from Gateway, because not anyone would do that. It really does take a special kind of character. And then even with that group of special characters who would be willing to risk their life to do this kind of thing, we don't even have one of the normal average ones. We've got this really cowardly, like, wretched example in Bob. So there we go. Yeah, so along with this sort of like comedic kind of look, there's also a real sense of danger as well. It is actually built up quite well of, like, actually how dangerous it is to go out on one of these trips. And there's a real sense of waiting as well. Like Bob is, he has got this sense of dread, and that's really brought out as well. But sort of like the tedium of just life on the spaceship is brought out. Maybe a bit too much. Maybe, I don't know. But I think it's very well written in that regard. And of course, like I said, there's two different timelines going on here. One on Gateway and one years later. And these are like alternative chapters. So you get a chapter with therapy, a chapter on Gateway and one of his trips out into space and things like that. And there's alternating chapters, and they really play into each other very well. They explain each other. Like, the stuff on Gateway plays into the therapy sessions, then of course the therapy sessions explain his actions and sort of foreshadow what his actions and inactions are going to be on Gateway, which is very good. Talking about some other characters here as well, there are lots of other characters in the book, but we see them all through Bob's eyes, so we never really truly know them or who they are. You know, for example, his long-term girlfriend Clara is summed up by having big eyebrows. It's sort of like, oh yeah, and there was this woman who had big eyebrows, and then later they end up to bed, but he doesn't really tell us anything why they ended up in bed. It's just, of course, they found each other attractive to begin with, but we're not told how they found each other attractive. It's really just summed up as sort of like Clara's function in Bob's life. And it's the same with his other love interests as well. They're not really fully explained, or what he finds attractive about them, or what they find attractive about him. It's just sort of like, oh yes, and they end up in bed, and it, you know, they do this, and it affects him in this way and things like that, which I think is quite interesting. And also there's lots of other Gateway pilots up there, and they all have interesting stories, and we do find out a bit about the stories, but only the stories that Bob finds interesting. You know, if someone's there and they don't have an interesting story, well, of course we don't ever learn about it, because it's not something that Bob would be interested in. For example, there's this family who are there together. They come up from Venus together, and they know there's a family of four or five of them, and they know that probably one or more of their members will die before one of them strikes it rich, but it only takes one of them to strike it rich, and then they can all go home rich. And that's quite a tragic kind of story of theirs. And also there's another next-door neighbour who lost his legs, and he's sort of living without his legs, and we find out the reason why he doesn't get himself repaired, or what he's still doing on the Gateway station. So yeah, lots of tragic characters, some of them who die, some of them who hit the money, and of course there's no real other outcome. Like I've said, either you get the money or you keep going out until you do, or you keep going out until you die. That's pretty much the way it goes. And of course the character that Bob spends most time with is Siegfried, his robot therapist, and this allows Frederick Pohl to explore all the themes of consciousness and humanity and free will, you know, all the things that you normally do with robots. We get all of that here in the book as well. Next up, science and technology. All very mysterious here, because the Heechee are mysterious and we don't know how anything works. So the scientists in the novel, they don't know how anything works, and neither do we. You know, it's just sufficiently advanced enough to be magic. And in fact, there's, you know, these few times when the technology is explained a little way. I really wasn't convinced. In a way, I was thinking, oh, okay, why did you bother explaining that? Why couldn't we have just had, you know, We could have done without the explanation. You could have just left that point along with all of the other points that weren't explained. You know, because again, it's not about the technology. It's about the people. It's about the living. You know, the way you live with this technology rather than the way it. You know, the way it works or anything like that. Talking of scientists, though, there are experts in this book, and they're all very one-dimensional, going back to the characters here as well, a bit, because they have to be one-dimensional, because if any of the scientists had any kind of depth or self-awareness or anything like that, they wouldn't be doing the things they were doing, because they're running, like, a human exploration project, and if they had any kind of sense, or if they were any more fleshed out, they would realize, hey, we can't do this kind of thing to humans. Maybe not. Maybe, I don't know, maybe this is just the world that's been set up there, because the world is, you know, it's sort of very much a capitalism, like it's run by a big corporation, and there's very little value to human life, but everything then is done for value of human life. It's like, okay, well, you know, we'll, all these people, they're going to volunteer and they're going to die, you know, most of them are going to die, but for every death that we get, we'll get a little bit of technology which can improve the 20 billion lives that are already, you know, of all these people living on Earth and stuff like that. So at one point it's sort of like, yeah, human life in the whole is worth a lot, so we'll try and increase everybody, the average human lifespan, and we'll try and increase the average, you know, human lifestyle, level of living, just a little bit. But to do that, of course, lots of people are going to die, and there's this whole kind of theme of, you know, capitalism. People are literally selling their life for money. And not just on Gateway, but I don't really want to go into that theme too much, because pretty much the book is a whole like explanation and critique of that whole kind of capitalism kind of theme as well. And yeah, let me go on to a little bit about the writing style, because the writing style is very self-knowing. It's like it's winking at me all the way through. Maybe you don't understand what I mean by winking at me, because this is just the note that I put down here, but it's like literally in the psychotherapy sessions, it's going to go, tell you what, we're going to set up this whole kind of Freudian thing, and to make it really blatantly obvious, we're going to give our hero a female name. He's going to be Robinette. So his whole life is going to be his fight against his name. And so I was like, no, call me Robinette. No, don't call me Robinette, call me Bob, Robert, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So there's all that kind of, you know, going on. And then it's like, hey, check this out. What we're going to do now, we're going to set up this whole subconscious homosexual tendencies kind of thing in the protagonist. And you may think it's going to be sitting there. And I'm actually going, wait a second, you can't just do this. You can't throw this in here. And of course, the book suddenly goes, me? I'm not being serious. Check this out. Homosexual tendencies realize. And it's like, whoa, what's going on here? And then it does this with many other themes. It's like, okay, you think people selling their lives for money is big. And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, really, whatever we're going to do. I don't really believe it. You know, it seems like it's just been put in there. It's like, now check this story out. And it tells a whole other story of really just taking that to an extreme level. I'm just going, whoa, again. And it's literally, it's like, it's pushing things just to go. It's like, okay, how much are you willing to go with here? Are you going to go, you know, I've set up this little thing, are you going to just go with the ride here, or are you not? And I really quite like that idea there. I mean, it's very bold writing. Or, again, like I said before, maybe Frederick Pohl is being serious in all these things. Maybe he isn't setting this up as a sort of like a postmodern look at all these themes and ideas. But if he isn't, he's like hit a genius level of ineptness in his writing. So I'd really do prefer to look at this book as a work of genius rather than as a work of missing a mark, like trying to go for a serious novel and missing. I would think he's rather going for the parody kind of postmodern look at stuff here. And yeah, to make the writing style even more sort of self-knowing, again, there's this whole sort of like everything's told from Bob's point of view, but it needs balancing in some way. So every few pages, every like 4 or 5 pages, there's a little advert or an extract for a lecture, sort of like a whole page is taken up in a box. It sort of goes, okay, here's a little extract from a little bit of written writing, or extract from a lecture, or a bit of an interview, or some news announcement. All these little snippets are just placed into the story, and these balance out Bob's point of view, because like he only explains things that are interesting him. So, for example, some science or some astronomical event or something like that, Bob knows about it, but it doesn't interest Bob enough to tell us. So Bob wouldn't spend any time thinking about it or talking about it because he's too self-absorbed. He won't notice other people's problems, and he won't notice other people's stories and things like that. So we get all these little, like, personal ads that are posted in Gateway. They're just dropped in there because we know what Bob needs and wants. But, you know, what are the rest of the population of Gateway thinking? And you know, Bob sort of talks about different missions that come in and go out, and some are successful and some aren't. But also we get some little mission reports as well, some short but like official flight reports, and how much money was earned in that mission and how many people died in that mission and things like that. So, these little snippets there are sort of commenting on the book itself and on the world itself in a quite clever little way there. Of course, you can read the book without it, but it'll be a bit more one-dimensional, a bit too narrow book in a way. And also, I did find myself skipping over them until I found a good place to pause the main story and then go back and read them, because they do interrupt a little bit, because they're not sort of in between chapters and they're not in between paragraphs. They're like, they just have a page themselves, and of course a conversation will run past one. And so I'm thinking, okay, I want to finish the conversation so I don't lose track, and then go back and read it again. So maybe they could have been positioned in the book a little bit better. I don't know. So I think that's pretty much all I want to say about the book. I don't have a lot to say about it because it's only a short book, and of course it's a well-known book. Maybe the pacing could have been a bit better, because it sort of does lag a bit two-thirds of the way through, and then of course the end is sort of wrapped up really quickly. Very neatly, expertly, very neatly, but it's like the therapy was sort of like, okay, we need to bring the therapy to the end because we're coming to the end of the book and we can't just have that trail away to nothing. So we're going to wrap up the therapy and we're going to wrap up the big action sequence at the end of the book and on his final trip out from Gateway. The thing is, the narrative flips backwards and forwards between them and then finishes like on a therapy session via another one of these little segments. And it's sort of like the finale is wrapped up in a little bit of an annoying way. Very good, you know, the science is good and the character is good and stuff, and the last few lines are really great as well. They sort of reveal a lot more about the book. But yeah, I was just a little bit annoyed about the end of the book. Maybe another 5 pages on that last mission, and maybe 3 or 4 less pages of Bob waiting again before he goes out. We could have sped things up a bit there as well. So overall, the rating of this book, I'm going to give it 4.2 stars. So around about there. Say 4.2 stars, because I'm thinking it's not quite 4.5, but it's a bit better than a 4-star book. So I'm going to be really picky here and say 4.2 stars here. So that's good. Meanwhile, this is a very good book, a classic book. You can call it a classic. It's old and it's stood up the test of time, I think, so I can call it a classic book. It is actually the first book in the series of Heechee novels, I think 4 Heechee novels, but I've never actually read any of those novels, because I actually talked to someone about it once in a bookshop, and I was going to buy one in the bookshop. And they said, no, we can't buy it. It was a new bookshop. And they said, no, because it's out of print. And I was like, oh, probably a reason why it's out of print. So then I asked about it a bit. This was years ago, and everyone says not to bother with them. And I've never bothered with the other books since then. So maybe if you've got some views on the following Heechee novels, you can send them in and tell me if it's worth me reading the next Heechee novels, the next 3 in this series here, or if I should not bother. But I'm thinking probably not bother. Next episode, I'm going to read another true classic, which is a book I've never read, because everyone says it's a science fiction classic. I just never got around to reading it. It's called Canticle for Leibowitz, and it's by someone Miller. I've left the book behind me there. So, Canticle for Leibowitz. So I'm going to try and keep up my run of positive reviews. And because I've heard lots of good things about this book, hopefully this is going to be a positive review. And I've actually read the first third of it already, because it's sort of 3 short stories combined into 1 novel. And I've already read the first short story and I'm really enjoying it. So keep sending in the emails, how you found the SFBRP, how you found this podcast, and also any new book suggestions or anything like that. And also thank you very much for all the people who volunteered to read my novel. I'm still, of course, going to be looking for more people to have a read-through of my book later on. But for now, I've got everyone I need to read it for now, and hopefully start getting some good feedback as people start finishing that over the next week or so. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll see you next time.